From WNYC in New York, this is NPR's On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. I'm pretty sure you know who this is.
I'm an angry mom, and I want answers to my questions.
Cindy Sheehan lost her son Casey, a Humvee mechanic, on April 4, 2004. He was one of eight soldiers killed in Baghdad's Sadr City that day by rocket-propelled grenades and small arms fire. Earlier this month, she made her way to the president's ranch in Crawford and then settled in to sit and wait and give interviews and wait and greet other grieving moms and wait for the president to give her a reason for the war and to hold him accountable for Casey's death. Late this week, she took a temporary leave when her mother had a stroke. But her quest has drawn multitudes to Crawford, and that doesn't even count the press.
It started out as a grieving mom on a lawn chair demanding to see the president. Now, Cindy Sheehan speaking for the nation's anti-war movement. Tonight, we're live from Crawford, Texas, with Cindy Sheehan.
What should we do about mother? Discrediting her is frustrating work. You can hear it in Rush Limbaugh's voice.
Her story is nothing more than forged documents. There's nothing about it that's real. It's nothing more than an attempt. It's the latest effort made by the coordinated left.
But defending her is as easy as apple pie. Air America's Randy Rhodes.
God forbid the story gets out that Cindy Sheehan is just a mom.
This week, Cindy Sheehan was the most cited person on BlogPulse, a site that tracks chatter in the blogosphere, edging out customary frontrunner President Bush and an earlier challenger, Harry Potter. In those many blogs, Sheehan has been called everything from a saint to a whore, the voice of reason and the voice of treason. And not just in blogs. Fox's Bill O'Reilly.
I think Mrs. Sheehan bear some responsibility for this, and also for the responsibility of other American families who have lost sons and daughters in Iraq who feel that this kind of behavior borders on treasonous.
As her conservative critics find evidence in past statements to besmirch her name, liberal fact-checkers seek to clear it, demonstrating just how the Drudge Report took her words seemingly praising the president when they met last year out of context, how she never said her son died for Israel. And as the argument grows louder, those talk show hosts who decline to condemn or canonize her only make it worse by taking the only other available route they know. They punditize her. MSNBC's Chris Matthews asked her to compare the campaign in Afghanistan to Iraq, and she didn't make a distinction.
The Taliban was harboring Al-Qaeda, which is the group that attacked us on 9/11.
Well, then we should have gone after Al-Qaeda and maybe not after the country of Afghanistan.
But that's where they were being harbored. That's where they were headquartered. Shouldn't we go after their headquarters? Doesn't that make sense?
It would have been better if she'd simply kept mum. And she probably knows that.
I'm not a strategist. I'm not a military strategist.
She's just a mom. And mindful of charges of political exploitation, Sheehan has bid the activists in her midst to take a back seat. She's moving camp closer to the president, courtesy of a kindly Crawford neighbor, and only moms and some dads get to go. One writer on the liberal blog The Daily Kos would surely approve and urge her to move further in that direction. He wrote, "We should call her Mother Sheehan. We should never call her Cindy. I don't know her. Mother Sheehan is her title and expresses her ceremonial status as a bereaved mother calling forth over the dead body of her son." That's a little Machiavellian, perhaps, or Rovian, but fiendishly clever, because for the media, mother is very nearly an immovable object. You can't knock her down, you can't blow her over, and as frustrating as it may be to some, she's particularly hard to rush.
Most people, and I'll lump myself in with this crowd, in talking about Cindy Sheehan, always offer the predicate that it's terrible she lost her son, and we grieve with her, and we're far sorry for her, and all that. And then it's followed by a but. Now, why are people doing this? Why are people saying, well, we're sorry, but she lost her son, and it's got a terrible thing to go through, and but. Because people are afraid of criticism.
But why?
Why should a mother have more moral authority on a particular issue than a father or the average person on the street?
It's a cultural thing, a very old cultural thing, the spiritual power projected on the bond between mother and child, a kind of purity that transcends politics and repels partisan attack, no matter how harsh. Jean Bethke Elstein, author of Political Mothers, says that a mother's moral authority only increases when her child dies.
And there's something that kicks in when you think mother-child. You think of someone young, vulnerable, dependent.
Sculpted by Michelangelo, perhaps?
Yes, exactly. The image of the suffering mother, the image of Madonna and child. And you don't think of a grown-up adult son who reenlisted to fight a war.
The mothers who finally brought an end to the notorious dirty war in Argentina made powerful use of that imagery. From 1976 to 83, people disappeared off the streets of Argentina every day. Many young students never heard from again. The mothers of the disappeared began to gather on Thursdays in a Buenos Aires square, walking in pairs because it was illegal to assemble in groups, without their husbands because it was not safe for them. Diana Taylor is the author of Disappearing Acts, Spectacles of Gender and Nationalism in Argentina's Dirty War.
There's a deep investment in the maternal in every society, and that's why it's so potent, because it's not an attack that's coming from the outside. It's coming from the very fiber of that society.
In Argentina, political activism was strictly forbidden, but the grieving mothers, at least while they stayed in the square, were seemingly untouchable.
They looked like matronly, middle-aged women. They wore flat shoes, and they started carrying the ID cards of their missing children, saying, these people existed, they've disappeared, we don't know where they are, you know where they are, we want you to be held accountable.
Years of silent maternal reproach bore down on the dictatorship and strengthened the resistance, and eventually the government fell. Very soon, mothers' movements emerged in Chile, Bolivia, Guatemala, Serbia, Chechnya, and elsewhere, recognizable because of the pictures they carried of the children no longer with them.
And if you also look at what happened with the families here of 9/11, when they went to testify before the commission, they were also carrying those photographs of their children. So these were a kind of a strategy that they had all taken up from the mothers' movement in Argentina.
In 2000, Diana Deese Thomases organized the Million Mom March for stronger gun control regulations, one of the biggest protest marches in U.S. history.
I wish I could tell you that I was a scholar of women's movements, but I wasn't. What I learned at the Million Mom March, and I really didn't have any background in this until the Million Mom March, that women are natural organizers after they have children. Suddenly you're organizing carpools, you're organizing field trips, you're on the PTA, suddenly moms are joining the NAACP. Issues that affect them become more important, I think, once you have children.
But eventually the mothers, defined in these movements as mothers and only as mothers, need allies who know how to wheel and deal and make things happen in an impure world. Jean Bethke Elstein.
Over time, the symbolic appearance of grieving mothers in the public square begins to lose its force. In a sense, you've made your point. Now politics has to take over.
But beware. The gun lobby accused the Million Mom March of playing politics when it found common cause with political allies. Cindy Sheehan is also vulnerable on that score, as she's beginning to learn. Again, Jean Bethke Elstein.
You're playing a very delicate game there, because if at some point your use of that imagery can be seen to be highly partisan, then the moral authority starts to drain away from it.
And therein lies the dilemma for mothers and mothers' movements. They are powerful because they are perceived as pure. They grab attention across the political spectrum precisely because they transcend politics. But the political arena is where change happens. A Madonna has no place there. Once she enters, she's no purer than Dad.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.